You're with us for the morning show as we meet one of Wisconsin's Teachers of the Year. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Patty Zemke, a sixth grade health teacher in the Wausau School District. She teaches at John Muir Middle School and Horace Mann Middle School. She's one of five educators selected as 2022 Wisconsin Teachers of the Year. What do you want to ask this longtime educator about teaching in the pandemic? Teachers, let's hear from you. How have you changed? How has your approach to reaching your kids changed? 800-642-1234 to join in. Patty, congratulations and welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much.
So what have you learned from the pandemic about reaching kids, about teaching them?
Well, I've always tried to make connections with my students in the classroom. We spend at least 5 to 10 minutes every day just getting to know one another through silly questions and different activities. But during the pandemic, I got to see the other side of them as far as who's taking care of their brothers and sisters while trying to hold a Google Meet, and obviously met all their pets, because what cat doesn't like to walk across the keyboard when you're in the middle of a meeting?
What have you changed about your approach, your style of teaching? Because you are, you know, you do try to make such a connection with the students, and yet through screens, it had to be a whole lot different.
It was. But I actually think we got to know each other better through the screen. I know that sounds not what people would typically think, but in class, if you're just having a class discussion, not everybody answers. There's students that don't care to share what they think. On the screen, I got a written response from everyone. And so I was able to see what those students who wouldn't talk in the class would actually what they actually thought.
So there was a lot more writing involved.
Well, not a lot, you know, comment here, comment there, sentence. But I just really enjoyed it.
How did you?
It was harder to teach that way because it was hours of reading and commenting. But it was worth it.
Did you have any challenges in keeping their attention in the virtual setup?
I do not think so. I had probably 90 to 100% participation because we just got to talk. So I know when we would have staff meetings, some of the staff would say, you know, the kids are really asking if they can just have some time and have a Google Meet where they can just talk and hang out virtually. And we need a teacher to observe that or listen to that. But we just talked. We ate breakfast together in the morning and talked. And then we'd get on to our curriculum as needed. But it was very comfortable to just hang out in the morning. And we started at 7:40 a.m. And they were all there ready to go.
Wow. If you're just joining us, we're talking with one of Wisconsin's 2022 Teachers of the Year, Patty Zemke, a sixth grade health teacher for the Wausau School District. You can join in. What questions do you have for a middle school health teacher and these experiences? What innovations in education do you want to stick around after the pandemic? What have you learned by teaching virtually? 800-642-1234. I'm wondering, Patty, you know, in the legislature, there's been a whole lot of pressure from lawmakers to have schools get back to in-person instruction. And as a teacher, did you feel that pressure to get back into the classroom?
I did not as a teacher. Personally, I wasn't pushing to have the students back into the classroom because we were doing just fine virtually. I love to see the students in the classroom. It's great to see the actual person in the face rather than just a little icon. But for me and my health class, we were doing pretty well online.
So what is your status now? When did you convert to in-classroom?
The students came back late February. And it was a great transition. You know, for example, you asked about, was it boring, or, you know, I teach health education, so our topics generally aren't boring, and people can think about their life and what's going on and assimilate with the topic. But the first day back in person, we were starting the topic of puberty.
And my students, that will get their attention.
Yes. And they were very vulnerable that first day. I asked them what was the most challenging part about puberty that they were expecting. And I had a student teacher who also started for the first time that day. And his eyeballs were so huge. They were as big as plates. Because you couldn't believe that the students were so forthcoming with what they thought the challenges were.
Did the students feel safe enough to learn and to focus in the classroom because they've had experience perhaps at home with COVID? Maybe a parent is an essential worker. And I know my little ones were so scared about returning to the classroom.
Well, we had the option if somebody didn't feel comfortable coming to school, they could still meet with us virtually. So I did have students that were still at home, and I had students in the classroom at the same time, which that was hard. You know, I liked it better when we were all virtual, and it would have been better if we were all in person. So having the split, the teaching was difficult because it seemed like the students at home kind of got left in the dust. Which was the good thing about having the student teachers. They could deal with the chat on the virtual meet and address the students at home while I addressed the students in the classroom. And then we would just switch so that he got to practice teaching too.
I feel like that would have been a challenge when you're trying to be two human beings, one meeting the expectations of the in-person class community and also having the students at home still in that virtual setup. Did you kind of feel like a tug of war between two, trying to, you know, go back and forth?
I did. And it was difficult. You know, sometimes I felt like the students at home would join the meet and then I don't know where they went. So like I would try to get their attention or, you know, type in the chat to them and they didn't necessarily respond. Where if that was happening in the classroom, then you just go up to that student and figure out what's going on. So if I wasn't connecting with them at home, it was really difficult to figure out what was happening and what I needed to do to help them.
What questions did your students have about the coronavirus?
I would say they didn't really have too many questions this year, but they did have questions when the pandemic first started the year before. And we would take time to talk about that in class. And I obviously didn't know that much about it. So we just kind of talked about fears and what their adults were doing to change lifestyle to address the issue.
So it sounds like you did some learning together.
Definitely. We learn together in health class a lot. There's times and I'm just like, well, I think we better Google that. Or so, yes, we practice learning together all the time.
We have middle school teacher from the Wausau School District, Patty Zemke, one of Wisconsin's 2022 Teachers of the Year. What do you want to tell a teacher? Do you work in education? What challenges have you faced in the hybrid environment, virtual and in-person classroom, doing both at once? Join in 800-642-1234. Looking back, looking at the future. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Switching gears here on a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The pandemic, it shed light on challenges people encounter in doing their jobs remotely, especially people with disabilities. But it's also demonstrated that workplaces of all kinds can turn on a dime and make necessary accommodations. The Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, provides protections for ensuring no one can be discriminated against in the workplace due to a disability. And we'll look closer at that with your stories at 800-642-1234. Democratic Representative Jimmy Anderson of Fitchburg has quadriplegia and has sought accommodations in the past from assembly leadership for floor sessions. Representative Anderson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate. How's it going?
Doing well. Let's start with your thoughts on the role of the ADA and its protections and significance. Where are you at with the ADA?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, as we mark another anniversary, I think I'm always reminded of how lucky I am to live in a country where the ADA exists. We were at the forefront of disability laws when we passed it, but I do think that it's time for us to again push the boundaries and see what we can do to try to provide other assistance, other laws, other rights to those with disabilities, not just here in the state of Wisconsin, but nationwide.
The disability community has been particularly hard hit in this pandemic. We've seen higher rates of unemployment, inequitable vaccine rollouts, delayed stimulus checks for people on Social Security. What have you observed and heard what it's like to get through this pandemic for a person with a disability?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that individuals with disabilities, whenever that there's a significant event like a pandemic, for instance, are always going to be a harder hit. We always have to deal with significant hurdles, more obstruction, that there's more difficulties in getting access to the benefits. But I will say also that I think the pandemic showed people that individuals with disabilities with the right accommodations can get access to things like employment or being able to be better integrated into society. I think that we need to find more ways for us to be able to find ways to integrate individuals with disabilities into our society. And again, while the pandemic was incredibly difficult, I think it also opened up a lot of eyes into ways to make lives better for people with disabilities.
You've been involved in your own battle for accommodations as a lawmaker. What are the requests you've made?
Yeah, so I think in the beginning, it was mainly to get access to the phone system in order to get to be able to call into committee hearings was the big fight in the beginning. Got access to that, which was wonderful. It took way too much. It took way too much fighting. But now we're trying to take another step forward, and I'm trying to get access to being able to call in to actually vote on the floor of the legislature. And so far we've made the requests, so we're negotiating back and forth with the leadership there in the Capitol building, and hopefully we can make some progress.
Yeah, and you've made these requests under the ADA and have said you would pursue legal action if necessary. Where does all this stand?
Yeah, so right now we're negotiating. We're trying to figure out what leadership is comfortable with, what we can be accommodated with. You know, the ADA, what it says is that I'm allowed accommodations, but that they are accommodations that can work for me. And so if, you know, leadership comes to me and provides me a different kind of accommodation that will still meet my needs, under the law, those are some things I have to accept. But at the same time, they have to meet my needs. And so right now we're trying to define what those needs are and what we can do to meet those needs.
A request you made is to limit floor sessions to between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. And there have been complaints that the late evening marathon legislation debates, what they're doing for the state's ability to see what's going on, business in the dark, would ending late night floor sessions improve democracy?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Whether or not I'm in a wheelchair and whether or not that's difficult to do for as someone with a disability, I think these late night floor sessions are just awful. I mean, people are voting on bills in this kind of marathon session. You know, we have older legislators that are trying to stay up till 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes to vote on this stuff. But also just to be able to get access to the Capitol building itself is difficult. And then, you know, not being able to watch legislators as they're talking about why they're voting for these bills. I think it's really important for us to be able to do our work when the people are able to watch us. And so, yeah, I think we should be ending these late night floor sessions.
We're talking with Jimmy Anderson, who is a state representative from Wisconsin's 47th Assembly District, and we're looking at protections under the ADA and where Wisconsin is falling short on accessibility. You can join in 800-642-1234. Representative, I want to get to voting and absentee bills. Your Republican counterparts in the legislature have introduced bills that would make absentee voting more difficult. Who will that affect? How will that affect people with disabilities?
Yeah, I mean, again, much in the way that, climate change touches so many parts of our lives, whether it deals with infrastructure or inequality or any of these things, disability in the same way, whenever we're talking about, healthcare or environmental access, or in this case, voting rights, we always get impacted much more significantly than the broader public. And so right now there is attempts to try to clamp down on individuals' rights to vote, particularly absentee voting, which is the way in which the majority of individuals with disabilities vote. Not only is it sometimes difficult to get access to voting locations, a lot of people with disabilities don't have access to driver's licenses, which has made voter ID particularly difficult for us with disabilities. But now trying to make it even more difficult for us to be able to now I have to prove that we're disabled, which is, again, an offensive idea to begin with, something that I had to wrestle with when I was asking for my own accommodations, prying into our individual healthcare status and things like that, I think is inappropriate. It's wrong. I think that the current system works well and that there's obviously been zero voter fraud in the state, or at least so little that it would have zero impact on the outcome of any election, whether at the president level or down to state assembly. So I think that these bills are nothing more than an attempt to try to prevent people from voting, and I think they're wrong.
I want to quickly ask you about drop boxes, which were widely used in Wisconsin last year due to COVID. How do you feel about court challenges to the use of absentee ballot drop boxes?
Again, I think that anything we can do to try to encourage more people to vote, we should. It's one of my big frustrations as a legislator that, if a Republican were to come to me to try to find a way to try to expand voting access in rural communities, I'm all for it. Whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, I think what matters is that we try to get more people voting. And I will fight for a Republican's right to vote, to get access to that vote. I really wish my Republican colleagues felt the same way. And these drop boxes are a great way for individuals to vote, particularly in places where there can be congestion, with finding other ways for people to be able to drop off their ballots in more dense communities like the community that I represent is good. And so for them to try to squash it, I think it's just a terrible thing.
What solutions can you offer for improving the voting experience for the disability community, boosting participation, and making Wisconsin a more accessible state?
Well, speaking of a way to try to improve voting access in our more rural communities, I think that we should look towards the Oregon model, where basically it's all mail voting. I think Colorado does pretty much the same thing. I think they've proven that mail-in voting is secure, it's safe, that there's very limited instances in which individuals or voter fraud happens, and often it's by mistake where individuals are voting in the wrong area by forgetting to update their address for one instance. But regardless, I think mail-in voting, I think, is the best way to do it, be able to get people to access the voting box from their own homes. And that also would impact or improve the voting process for individuals with disabilities as well.
Representative Anderson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
Jimmy Anderson is a state representative from Wisconsin's 47th Assembly District, which includes Fitchburg, and voters first elected him to the Assembly in 2017. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Republican State Representative Donna Roser of Marshfield. Her district includes the city of Colby, and she's pushing legislation that would make Colby the official state cheese. What do you think should be the state cheese of Wisconsin? Should there be one at all? Join in 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap after a news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. In 1885, cheese historians say Colby was born in Colby, Wisconsin, by modifying the process to produce cheddar. And residents of the city west of Wausau have pushed for decades to have the designation of official state cheese. And the bill doing just that received a hearing in the Assembly Committee on Local Government earlier this month. Do you support passing a state law that would make Colby the official state cheese? What are your thoughts about this legislation? 800-642-1234. Donna Roser is a Republican state representative from Marshfield. She represents parts of Marathon, Wood, and Clark counties, including the city of Colby. Representative Roser, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Well, spell it out for us. Why should Colby become the official state cheese?
Well, I believe that that is the case because Colby has a unique historical, the history of Colby is so unique. Representative Culp, who was my predecessor, introduced this bill, and I'm just kind of carrying the torch for him. Senator Bernier, who is the Senate co-sponsor in this, was actually approached by a student, like in 2016, 2017, asking her to pursue making Colby cheese the state cheese. So she's been interested in this for a lot more years than I have because I'm a freshman legislator. But we both believe that Colby should be named as the state cheese because of its unique rural history. You mentioned that a new process was introduced, the cold water wash, with producing Colby cheese. Colby cheese has an international appeal. It's the only cheese made in the state that's named for a city. We certainly have lots of different cheeses. We are not elevating Colby cheese above any of the other cheese that's made in Wisconsin. We're just recognizing its unique rural history that really helped put Wisconsin on the map as the cheesehead state.
Well, when you say you're not elevating Colby above other cheeses, you know, there is concern around that, you know, it would make Colby stand out and give it the upper hand in marketing versus other varieties. What do you say about that?
Well, our hope would be that if you have a cheese platter with Colby on it, you've got lots of other cheeses. So we would hope that Colby would kind of lift all the other cheeses. You know, I was looking at the Blue Book last night, Kate, just in preparation for this interview. And I was looking at all the different things that are listed as the state flower and the state animal and the state fruit. There are other animals and fruits and trees and all the other things that we have listed. But for unique reasons, these particular items are listed in the Blue Book as the animal, the bird, the fish, the insect, all of those things. So we believe that Colby cheese brings a uniqueness to it that makes it worthy of being listed in the Blue Book as the state cheese. I agree with you that there are people that don't agree with us, and we have, you know, all we can do is present our case. we believe that Colby should be the state cheese, and maybe we already believe that because of our representation of this area, and we will just continue to pursue that. But you're right. There are people that believe that we are elevating Colby cheese. That is not our intention.
What would it mean to the city if Colby became the state's official cheese?
Well, we already have Colby Cheese Days. I don't know if you're aware of the big weekend that we just had honoring Colby Cheese in Colby. And there's already a sign in Colby that recognizes Colby as the place where Colby cheese was invented. I think it would just give some recognition to what Colby, Wisconsin has brought in with the cheese to the state of Wisconsin. And there are a lot of people in Colby very excited about this. And it would just be an additional feather in their cap that people recognized the small rural city that Colby cheese was named after.
We're talking about legislation that would make Colby the official state cheese of Wisconsin. Republican State Representative Donna Roser is with us, one of its supporters, co-sponsors, and she represents the city of Colby. You can join in. What questions do you have about Colby or whether we should have an official state cheese? What do you want to ask State Representative Roser from Marshfield? 800-642-1234. At the public hearing, fellow Republican Representative Rick Gundrum of Slinger said he had an issue making one cheese the state cheese.
We have a wide variety of stores and shops in my district that have a wide selection of Wisconsin cheese varieties that they sell. So cheese is very popular in Wisconsin, along with beer and sausage. So I think... I can't get behind it 100%.
I can't get behind it 100%. What is your response?
I appreciate Representative Gundrum's comments, and I certainly understand where he's coming from. I would just like to go back to the fact that no other cheese in Wisconsin has the unique history that Colby cheese has. Not only was it formulated in Colby, Wisconsin, but it also introduced the cold water wash processing that is now used to make other cheeses. And there's no other cheese in the state of Wisconsin that's named for a city in the state of Wisconsin, which happens to be in my assembly district.
The USDA says Wisconsin produces far more mozzarella and cheddar over Colby, so why not mozzarella or cheddar as the state cheese?
It doesn't have the unique rural Wisconsin history that Colby cheese has. I don't know of a mozzarella Wisconsin or a cheddar Wisconsin. It's that entrepreneurial, creative spirit that we wish to honor in the formulation of Colby cheese in Colby, Wisconsin.
You know, similar proposals have been introduced and failed to gain traction in the legislature. The bill didn't make it out of committee in the last session. Why do you expect a different outcome this time?
I'm not sure that we do. We just continue to support the legislation. The reason it didn't get out last time is Representative Culp did have a hearing in the state Senate, but then COVID hit and Representative Culp did not seek reelection, so he did not pursue that. So it didn't make it out because of a lack of a process. It made it out because the government kind of shut down in March of 2020, but it did receive a Senate hearing, and Senator Bernier is seeking to have it receive a Senate hearing in this session as well. So we just continue to plug away and let people know how special we believe Colby cheese is to the state of Wisconsin.
Well, here's a question for you. Is Colby your favorite cheese?
It's one of my favorite cheeses. I am. I served Colby cheese. I went on a bus trip the other day, and I took Colby cheese and crackers with me to serve on the bus. I think Colby cheese was served during the Senate hearing. I don't know if you've done any research, but Colby actually had a play that they did for this legislation when Representative Culp introduced it. And the choir went to Madison and sang the Colby cheese song with cheese heads on. And so it was a really big deal. They took Colby cheese. I love cheese. My internal medicine doc told me that I will never have osteoporosis because of the amount of cheese I eat. So Colby cheese is one of my favorite cheeses. It's a sweeter cheese. It's soft. I really do like Colby cheese very much.
Well, let's bring in Pat in Madison, who is a cheese scientist. Hi, Pat.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not going to put my hat on either side of the ring for this one. I'm going to remain a conscientious objector. But I did want to just do a little point of order that the cold water washing step isn't something that we invented here in Wisconsin. That step is used for many different cheese varieties, things like Gouda in the Netherlands. We just so happen to apply it to the cheddar-making process. And I'll take any comments or answers off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, Pat, just a moment here. Can you explain a little bit further about that cold water wash history and where have you seen it in other parts of the world?
Yeah, so that washing step, what it's doing is actually diluting lactose in the cheese. And lactose is what the little microbes we have, the cultures, ferment into acid. So the representatives mentioned Colby being a sweeter cheese. That is because of that cold water washing step. But it's used in other cheeses, too, like Gouda cheese in the Netherlands. They had a lot of water back in the day due to all the flooding, so they had no choice into diluting that lactose. We just applied it to the cheddar process here in the state, and that's what made Colby so unique.
Pat, thank you for bringing that historical background as well, Representative. Pat saying that we happen to just apply this step to the cheddar making process.
Well, the Colby is what we're talking about now, not necessarily cheddar. And I did mention that the cold water wash was used to produce other cheeses now. It's my understanding that the cold water wash was applied to make the Colby cheese in Colby, and that was back in the 1880s. I'm not sure that cold water wash was used prior to that in making of other cheeses. Perhaps it was, but that it certainly was a huge learning curve and really helped, I think, to move Wisconsin forward as a major cheese-making state. And I wish the scientist would have stayed on the phone. He could have answered that question. But it's my understanding that back in the 1880s, Mr. Steinwald was one of the first to produce that cold water wash in the cheese-making process in Wisconsin.
We have Republican Representative Donna Roser of Marshfield on the line as we discuss issues facing central Wisconsin. Do you live in Marathon Wood and Clark counties? What do you want to ask? How could state lawmakers improve the outlook of rural economies? Be a part of the conversation, 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap in a minute with Representative Roser here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about central Wisconsin legislative priorities with first-term Republican Assembly member Donna Roser of Marshfield. A bit more on her background. She retired as a nurse educator from the UW-Eau Claire College of Nursing last year. She's worked as an ER nurse, medical surgical RN. What do you want to ask? What do you want to convey about issues hitting rural areas? 800-642-1234. And Representative Roser is with us for about 10 more minutes. On the Colby cheese thread, let's bring in Dorothy now in Milwaukee. Hi, Dorothy. What would you like to add?
Just that I love Colby. It's my comfort food. It's my go-to food. But I'm just curious, if you're talking about the economy in rural Wisconsin, I'm thinking that we don't export trees, but we do export cheese worldwide. And I'm aware of all kinds of cheese in Wisconsin. And I'm thinking of it from a marketing perspective, that I don't think we really want to raise up one cheese over the other. Is there some other way that we could honor Colby and Colby cheese?
Dorothy, thanks. Representative.
Well, I think, thank you, Dorothy. I appreciate your calling in and asking this question. I think we already do that in part. We just had 3 or 4 days of celebration of Colby Cheese Days in Colby. We had a parade on Sunday, of which I was, which I was a part of. People in Colby know that they are special because of their place in history with the processing and the formulation of Colby cheese. There's a sign outside the small village that says that Colby is where Colby cheese. There have been a lot of newspaper articles through the years explaining the history of Colby cheese. And I guess another thing that just crossed my mind is when we have Colby Cheese Days, we could always do a resolution in the state assembly, in the state senate, honoring Colby as the place where Colby cheese was formulated and the fact that Colby cheese is named after that. I would like to also add that I believe that when we honor cheeses, it raises all the cheeses. And so when I go to a place and there's a cheese tray and Colby cheese is a part of that, I don't just eat the Colby cheese off of that cheese tray. There are many other things. I think if people go into a store to buy Colby cheese, they can be introduced to a wide variety of other cheeses. And I would just like to see Colby just kind of lift all of those cheeses to public awareness, because we certainly have some wonderful specialty cheeses, and cheddar and mozzarella there. We've already mentioned those two cheeses. I understand what people say, and I'm not really looking to, as I said before, mm-hmm. elevate Colby cheese. I'm trying to have people look at this unique rural history of what happened in Colby, Wisconsin, that I believe helped lead Wisconsin to the forefront as the cheese-making state. And we're thankful for all that export that happens in Wisconsin, and thankful that lots of people eat our cheeses.
Dorothy, thanks for the call. Switching topics here to tourism, you introduced a bill this year that would create a grant program that's focused on supporting tourism in rural communities, and recipients could get matching grants up to $40,000. What kind of projects would you be eyeing, and would you like to see supported with this state grant?
Well, we have the Lucille Tax Center that's in Spencer, and it's a small venue that certainly would benefit from this. The bill states that communities under 20,000 population would be qualified for this grant. It's a matching grant of $500,000, $250,000 in the first biennium and $250,000 in the second biennium. I would be looking to support small local cultural events like the Lucille Tax Center, like our Helen Connor Laird Center at the UW Stevens Point at Marshfield campus. All of these small venues that really took a hit during this last 12 to 18 months. And we're really looking at this bill to kind of jumpstart some of these venues that meet a need. I'll tell you a story. When we moved to Marshfield in 1988, my husband was a cardiothoracic surgeon and joined the Marshfield Clinic. And we moved here, obviously. And when we came to interview, they told us that for every position, every physician position, they interviewed 4 physicians, and 2 of those did not come to Marshfield because the wives didn't see cultural opportunities in a small rural community. And so that really made me understand that we needed cultural events to attract a wide variety of people to our community. And this grant program would help those small venues to maintain their visibility and their ability to meet the cultural needs of their communities. So it's small venues like that that I would like to see apply for these grants. It has to be matched with an equal amount of non-state dollars. Hmm. So I thought that was important because there needs to be skin in the game from local communities. And that actually allows that $500,000 grant program to have an impact of $1 million in our local communities.
We're talking state politics with Republican Representative Donna Roser of Marshfield. Representative, you mentioned you bring up health care, and your background is in health care as a nurse. You've taught nursing courses. Are you working on any legislation in the realm of health care?
Well, I've co-sponsored some legislation in the realm of health care. We also, I don't know if you've looked at the makeup, but we have three nurses in the state assembly and a chiropractor. So we are looking at kind of forming a health coalition to talk about health-related bills that get introduced. We actually have a public hearing in the health committee on Thursday with 11 bills that we're going to be looking at. So I think we're going to be meeting prior to that long day and talk about that. The other thing, and I see we only have 3 minutes, but I also want to tell you that I serve currently as a Wood County Board Supervisor, and I'm chair of the Health and Human Services Committee. Wood County owns 2 nursing homes, so I have been very well aware of the low reimbursement for nursing home rates, so I worked very hard to increase nursing home reimbursement rates. I also understand how difficult staffing is in these facilities. Mm. So I also worked hard to get some additional money for direct caregivers, both in family care and in nursing homes. And I hope that is beneficial.
Very quickly, how can lawmakers address Wisconsin's nursing shortages?
Well, one thing that we did, I don't know if you looked at the budget, but we put $5 million into the budget in order to launch nurse educators programs. There is a lack of nurses because we don't have, because there's a critical shortage of nurse educators. And so $5 million of GPR was put in as a grant program to help nurses pursue their master's or doctoral degree in order to prepare to be nurse educators. So I'm hoping that is going to help a little bit too.
Representative Roser, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Donna Roser, Republican State Representative from Marshfield. She represents parts of Marathon, Wood, and Clark counties. Earlier, we talked with Democratic Representative Jimmy Anderson of Fitchburg. Just ahead, we look at what's needed to stop adding greenhouse gases to the atmosphere by 2050. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.